Talk about record keeping. As a chiropractic expert witness, I've been involved in about 14 malpractice lawsuits against chiropractors, all in South Carolina, over the past 15 years. I can tell you without reservation that bad record keeping plays a part in every single one of those cases. That's not what you're sued for, bad record keeping. You're sued for something else, but the bad record keeping compounds the problem. This record keeping issue is something that chiropractors have avoided and don't want to deal with. Nobody likes record keeping. It's a real pain. I can just tell you now that the days of sloppy record keeping have to be over. You must do a good job of record keeping now. It is unacceptable to not keep good records. You have to do that. So, in that regard, let's talk about what kind of records you need. What kind of record keeping is essential? What kind is absolutely necessary? What kind might be recommended? What kind might be recommended and maybe desired? Obviously, let's just talk about a patient's file. If you have a patient's file, what should be in the patient's file? Think about this. When a patient comes in the office, what's the first thing we generally do? We fill out it. We have an information card or information sheet that a patient fills out. It's name, address, phone number, who your insurance company is, where you work, who your husband's name is, your wife's name. Information, just data. Okay, a lot of that data we use to file insurance claims, we use to create a mailing list so that we can mail out information to patients, we use to have a phone list so in case we need to cancel an appointment we can call people, we find out where they work, we know what kind of insurance they have so we know about payment. So most of that information we use. If there's any information that you don't use, then don't collect it. Just don't collect it. But if you need that information, it's going to be helpful to you, then you need to do it. When I first started in practice 27 years ago, I didn't have on my form, on the data form, I didn't have Social Security number. Because back then, the Social Security number, your Social Security card still said on it, not to be used for identification purposes. You know, don't use this number for ID purposes. Now it's the number one ID card. Your Social Security number is your driver's license number in most states, it's your service number in the military. You have to have a Social Security number in order for your parents to take a tax exemption for you, and you have to have it when you're 1 year old. You can get away without it until you're one. Now you need it. In the old days when I was growing up, you got a Social Security card when you got a job. That's the first time you needed it. When you got a job, you had to have a Social Security number. These days you get it under one. You usually get it when you're born. Okay? And your parents cannot take an exemption for you until you have a Social Security number. So it is now our number one way of identifying people. Your grades are issued by Social Security number. So Social Security number is used all the time. You really, and in our computer programs, our chiropractic computer programs, guess how patients are identified? Social Security number. So you're going to need to collect the Social Security numbers now. Not only of the patient, but maybe the patient's spouse, if they're the insured party. So you may need Social Security numbers on the whole family. So it's a pain, but you need it. So, first thing we do is collect data. We need information. Secondly, patient comes in, they've given us data and how they're going to pay and what their names are. Second piece of paper is a case history form. Patient comes in and either they fill it out themselves or the doctor helps them fill it out by asking questions, or a staff member does that. So we have a case history form. What kind of problems are you having? What are your past problem areas? We need to ask about certain areas. You know, usually five areas that we say you always ask about. It's very important that you know about a patient's history of trauma, any accidents, any car wrecks, any bad falls, sports injuries, patient's history of surgery, especially back surgery, but also any surgery. Okay? Patient's history of surgery. We need to know what kind of surgery they had, when it was done, complications. Some of those surgeries could affect what you're going to do. Person with spinal surgery, pelvic surgery, certainly. OK, Okay? Patient's history of medications. What kind of medications are you taking now? What kind have you taken in the past? You know, sometimes a very long list, by the way. And I always find it interesting at this point, just as a little side note, find it interesting to find out if the patients know what the medications are for. And a lot of patients really haven't a clue. They know they're taking a blue pill, a red pill, and a green pill, but they don't have a clue what they're for or what the names are, you know, not a clue. That gives you a little information about the patient's health awareness, their health awareness. That's something we ought to know about. A patient who's had a bunch of organs removed and doesn't even know which ones, you know, they're not very aware. Patients who take a whole lot of medications and don't know what they're for, not very aware. You're dealing with awareness situations. So it's important that you kind of know the patient's status in that regard. So we have trauma, we have surgery, we have medications, we have radiation history. Especially if you're going to be x-raying a patient, you want to know their radiation history. If they just had 27 views taken at the hospital day before yesterday, maybe you could get those films, maybe you could use those films and avoid radiating the patient today. Maybe you're going to have to take two films anyway, but maybe you won't have to take six more. So awareness of radiation is an important area. So we have trauma, medications, radiation, surgeries. Obviously, you need to know why the patient is coming to you. You know, either you can couch this in several different terms. You can say, what is your present problem, or what brought you here today, or how can I help you, what can I do for you? You know, we need to find out what the patient's expectations are. A lot of patients come to chiropractors with you know, wrong expectations or unrealistic expectations. They will tell you, you know, my neighbor had this horrible back problem, and he came in here, he couldn't even walk, they carried him in, and you adjusted him, and he ran out and we played tennis that afternoon. So he's expecting the same thing. So we have to deal with the patient's expectations, so you need to get their expectations, find out what they are, and deal with those. So if you have that little area in terms of your case history, there are some other areas that are to be brought up, like family history, find out what kinds of problems health problems have been in the family, certain hereditary situations, childhood health. You want to ask a patient's long-term health history. You know, to me it's not very interesting whether or not they had measles or what age they had the mumps, but it could be of importance, so we need to do a scanning history at least. You need to take that information down. And of course, the present problem, and then we're going to, from that, we're going to kick off into an examination. So the patient history, you know, and there are all kinds of little mnemonic devices, the QRS, PQRS, TVUV, you know, those letters that you remember. The other is PAINS, P-A-I-N-S, you know, the various acronyms that give you a sense of what kind of problem the person is having, how severe is it, what exacerbates it, what makes it better, how long has it been there, and what is the nature of the problem, what's the nature of the pain. And discussing this with the patient gives you a sense of awareness of what they're expecting from a chiropractor. So taking that information is all your case history information. Secondly, then we're going to examine the patient. So you're going to have a case history form. That's another piece of paper in the patient's file. Then we have the examination. So we'll have an exam form. Maybe it's on the back of your history form. I don't know. But you need an exam form. We need to do a chiropractic analysis, a chiropractic examination, a scanning examination of the entire spine. You may then focus in and do some particular examination areas, but every patient I would expect would be palpated, would have leg checks, would have range of motion, would have some temperature device used on them, spinal temperature device, whether it be a very sophisticated computerized instrument or whether it be an old-fashioned, you know, bipolar, old-fashioned NCM or nerve scope. You know, that we use some temperature device, we use leg checks, we use range of motion, palpation, motion palpation. So we run through that standard exam. Whether or not you choose to do orthopedic and neurological exams, you have to decide how inclusive you're going to be. I like to kind of keep in my mind, can this exam give me any information that is useful chiropractically? You know, and if it's called an orthopedic test, but it gives me information that is useful chiropractically, then I don't mind doing it. If it's just to be done to, you know, identify one disease from another, you know, you have to decide how you're going to approach this area. But I would just tell you there are some orthopedic and neurological tests that are useful to chiropractors. Those tests should probably not be called orthopedic and neurological tests. They're in the common domain. They're the tests that are useful to several people. And a chiropractor may find some of that information, may find that information useful. So information that is necessary to determine what kind of problem the patient has, you know, and here we get into the magic D word. Do we use the term making a diagnosis or not? It's pretty common terminology these days. You may wish to preface diagnosis by saying chiropractic diagnosis, clinical impression, diagnostic impression. So you may use some other little phrases and words, but basically it comes down to what's the matter with the patient, all right? Name it. Name the problem. And, you know, of course, we get into philosophical discussions here. Wait a minute, we're not in the business of naming medical conditions. Well, what about chiropractic conditions? Yes. So we're going to obviously be particularly interested in vertebral subluxations, but we may also be interested in concurrent events going on within the patient's body, things that may be also present in addition to subluxations. We may need to list them, name them. So making your determination of the patient's problem is the net result of this exam form. So once you've completed that, that's a piece of paper. Then you determine what are you going to do for the patient. So we need to create a plan of care. There should be a plan of care present somewhere in the patient's file. Based on the information that you have gathered and the demographic data, like patient's age, you're going to determine a program of care. And you're going to set up a plan of care. So you determine the plan of care that is necessary. You explain it to the patient. You get their confirmation that they're willing to go along with the plan of care, and then you start carrying out the plan of care. And if it involves chiropractic adjustment, it involves rehabilitative things at home, then you exercises or something, you write it down what the plan of care is, you get started. Each time you see the patient in carrying out that plan of care, you need to do a little update. So, you know, we use the term SOAP notes. SOAP notes, is subjective problem, objective problem, your assessment, and then your plan of care and the procedures that you do. So each encounter could be sort of a shortened version of that first visit, which is a long encounter, the exam, the history, and all that. But we do a short version of that each visit when a patient comes in. So if our recommendations for a plan of care are three times a week, then we're going to be three times a week making a short version of all the paperwork we've done beforehand, SOAP, and we document that. It's very important that you ask, has anything changed? You need to ask that question. You know, when you're seeing a patient three times a week or two times a week, the patient may get in a wreck on Monday, they see you on Wednesday, they don't even tell you about it unless you ask. So it's important that the patients have some cues to let them know that they're supposed to let you know any changes going on. Good or bad? Patient's getting worse, patient's getting better, patient's staying the same. You need to know about that. So we document this. So those are pieces of paper that you would have in the patient's file. Some of them you may be capable of keeping on a disk. If you're doing this on a computer, you can keep it on the hard drive. You can keep it on a floppy disk. You don't necessarily have to print it all out. If you can call it up on the screen and read it and have it accessible to you so that you can see it. Another thing is, what if another doctor needed to step in and see your patient today? Would they know what to do based on the documentation that you have? That's a little question you can give yourself as a test. Could someone else step in and do the appropriate care based on what I've written and what I've documented so far? That's a good question to ask. People say, ask this question, well, how thorough do I have to be in keeping records? How much do I have to write down? Here's a little guideline that you can use. We say this, that a third party, an uninterested third party, ought to be able to look at your records and recreate what happened on any given visit okay, from your records, recreate it, to, you know, be able to come up with what the patient told you, what you told the patient, what you did for the patient, and what the, what your next encounter, when your next encounter is going to be. All of that should be available in your notes, so that a third party could say, here's what happened on that visit. The doctor did this, 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 and this. The patient reported this, this, and this, and it was agreed that we would do this. Here's the procedure for today, and then our next encounter was that. So it's important that you have that level of record keeping so that someone could recreate the visit from your notes. Just writing down your listings, that's part of it. That's your procedures that you did for the day. But what about subjective, objective, your plan? You know, plans change. You may start off a patient with a three-time-a-week plan, but very quickly go to a two-time-a-week plan. Where is it noted in your notes? You need to note that. So when you change a plan, you definitely notate that. All of those records would be there. Here are some other things that you may not think of that probably need to be in your patient's file. If a patient is being concurrently treated by either for the same condition or some other condition, if they're seeing a medical doctor, seeing an orthopedist, if they're seeing their family practitioner, an internist, at the same time they're seeing you for ongoing care, it's up to you to maintain an awareness of what's going on in that patient's life so that you know whether or not the care they're getting elsewhere affects what you're doing. And you probably ought to see to it that the other doctors taking care of a patient know what you're doing. The fax machine is a wonderful thing. You can fax things back and forth real quickly, real easily, and stay aware of what's going on. You may want to fax a weekly summary of your care to the patient's internist. If they're being seen on an ongoing basis by another doctor, awareness of each other's care is important. In malpractice trials, it is frequently asked of doctors of chiropractic, how aware were you of the patient's other care? Did you make any attempt to find out? Did you contact the hospital and ask how they were treated and what went on? Did you contact the patient's other doctors and find out what's going on? How aware were you? Were you aware that the patient had an MRI, that they had lab work? Did you get the results? Did you check on it? Were you aware? This is being aware of what's going on is an important item these days. So any other documentation of the patient's healthcare status in an ongoing basis that is going on at the same time you're taking care of them, you need to know about. And so you need to have some, you may want to have some of that information in your patient file. If the patient has an MRI ordered by some other doctor, you should certainly get a copy of the results and find out what's going on with that. Very important. So anyway, that level of record keeping. X-rays, you know, obviously you keep your X-rays. Let me mention something to you about South Carolina. South Carolina regulations, board regulations, now say that how long do you have to keep a patient's records? How long? You know, we always come up with some, 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, this sort of thing. South Carolina now says forever. You keep a patient's records indefinitely, forever. You don't destroy patient records. It creates a problem for storage. You know, you need a closet, you need an attic, you need a basement to store records, but we keep records now forever. There is no time period at which it's safe to throw all the records out in South Carolina. Not every state says that. 5 years, 7 years, 10 years is not unusual. The whole field of electronic information storage is a big field these days. Storing data and storing records is important. So if you can get your X-rays copied and put on a CD-ROM, it's a lot easier to store CD-ROMs than it is CDs, than it is to store big bulky X-rays. And record keeping data that can be compacted and kept in a compact method is obviously a lot easier for doctors than big old cases of file cabinets and papers and X-rays. But we have to keep records, make them available to people. Sharing records, we have to be willing to share records. You may get subpoenas for records, and subpoenas order you to release records. You don't have a choice. This is a court ordering you. If you don't go along with the court order, then they come arrest you, and they'll take you to jail and probably grab the records too. So it's important that we cooperate.